know what time it is. It's 4:30, the first Wednesday of the month, and you're listening to KDNK Radio. This is the Public Affairs Show, Current Ritual, and I'm SS Kitty, your host. And today, I am so excited to have Harper from Two Roots Farm on the program. This had been becoming, Harper, you should consider yourself lucky, because this had been becoming like the mushroom current of Public Affairs Show, where I was like, and I probably will continue to try to cover Prop 122, but I decided to take a break from the mushrooms and talk about something else that's very vital. So welcome, Harper. Please tell our audience, if they don't know what Two Roots Farm is, can you talk about that a little bit? It's not working. Shoot, they told me that mic was working, and it is not. All right, let's switch to that one. So this is happening. This is the third time. They told me that mic was on, and it ain't on today.
All right, are we working over
here? Now we're here. Beautiful. I'm not trusting mic 2 ever again. I don't think I'll ever. Even if someone tells me, yep, it's fixed, I'm going to be like, no, I don't trust that mic 2. Anyway, as I was saying, Harper, please tell us about yourself and Two Roots Farm.
Yeah, no worries. I'm really glad to be here, by the way. Thanks so much for having me on. So, yeah, Two Roots Farm is based out of Emma in Basalt here. I'm on Emma Open Space. I get to lease land from Pitkin County, and I grow vegetables and herbs and flowers for the community here. I sell through CSA, which stands for Community Supported Agriculture, and I sell at an on-site farm stand on Fridays through the summer and to local restaurants as well. Currently, I'm selling through my website, actually, at tworootsfarm.com. People are just ordering online, and we're packing up boxes of our winter fresh produce that is coming out of our greenhouses at the moment. Once June rolls around, we have a lot more opportunity to get our product. We have a lot more availability with that.
Right. But it is good to know, because you think Colorado, oh, I can only buy fresh local stuff during the summer at the farmer's market. But you're saying that your CSA even goes through the winter and people can still get fresh local produce right now.
Well, the CSA actually does end at the end of October. Okay. But right now we are doing some online sales. So it's minimal, but we're every year doing more and more producing through the winter as much as we can. You know, growing here in Colorado, the season is short. So we're always trying to extend that as much as we can.
Yeah.
For right now, the CSA runs from the beginning of June through the end of October.
Okay, awesome, awesome. So tworootsfarm.com is where people would find more info.
Definitely.
Awesome, awesome, if they haven't already connected with you. So my next question is, because you're a young female, and I think it's really cool that you're a farmer. So what keeps you, like, what got you passionate about farming, and what keeps you passionate about farming?
Yeah, I was really lucky to find farming when I was in college at the University of Montana. There was a student farm there, and it just connected a lot of dots for me of what I wanted to do with my life, like philosophically. Learning about climate change and all these negative impacts that humans were having on the planet, and then also seeing at the same time this bright light in agriculture, in regenerative agriculture, and how I could work outside with my hands and maybe even be my own boss and also be making a positive impact on the planet. So that's kind of how I got into it in college. It was all, lucky to be exposed to it, and then a philosophical just drive to want to do something, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed little girl wanting to change the world. And then,
hey, there's a lot of us. We need us.
Yeah, no,
all of you.
Me.
Show
I
up.
Keep
follow
going.
Those dreams. Yes, we need us.
And I'm very happy I followed that path. I'm glad to be here today telling you that I own my own farm and am running, at this point have several employees and a large CSA and serving a whole community. So, I found agriculture in college. Grew to love the work, grew to love being, doing something really tangible and challenging. There's never a boring day on the farm. Every day is a new challenge. Every season is a new adventure. Every year is completely different. So
right.
I love that about farming.
Right. I guess you don't get bored.
No, it's very hard to get bored running a farm.
Right. There's always plenty of work to do. The next thing is, and this was, this was kind of a funny question that I had for you, but we're going to get into it. So I wanted the listeners, from a farmer's perspective, to weigh in on what does it really mean to grocery shop? And what's like a fact or like a farmer's perspective on grocery shopping? So
for the listeners?
Yeah, no, this was a fun question to think about. I think I want to just kind of start talking about the difference of buying local food and maybe more specifically local food from a small scale producer versus buying, you know, conventional food from a grocery store. And I think there's so many advantages to buying local food. It touches so many different aspects of our lives. I mean, first of all, flavor. I think that, you know, you taste the difference when a tomato is ripened on the vine or when, you know, the lettuce was harvested 4 hours earlier. You truly do taste the difference. And then there's health, your own personal health. Vegetables start losing their nutrients within 24 hours of being harvested. You know, they're slowly dying, essentially. And
right.
The fresher you get your produce, the healthier it is, quite scientifically.
Right.
So those are two immediate reasons for anyone to buy local. But additionally, a farm like mine, we view ourselves as soil stewards. So what I'm really doing on my farm is tending to the life of the soil. And I'm on a small scale for that reason, because I really think that to actually give the attention to the microorganisms and biology that, and
I guess mycelium is still part of this conversation.
Yeah, we're back on the mushroom
show. I knew it fit in somehow.
There you go. I tied it in. Right. Exactly. No, I mean, I'm sure a lot of your listeners already know, but you know, there's 1 billion microscopic cells in just a teaspoon of soil. So we only know a tiny, tiny bit about soil science and soil life. But what we do know,
we know about soil depletion.
And
with agrofarming.
Exactly. Yeah. And what we do know is that, you know, healthy soil is very alive. And there are really complicated interactions going on between the life of the soil and our plant roots. So for me as a farmer, it's really important to make sure that I have healthy, vibrant, alive soil. So to me, that means, you know, I don't use any chemicals, spraying chemicals. I try to minimize the intensity of which I work the soil. So I'm constantly trying to avoid inverting the soil layers or basically disrupting the mushroom, the fungus.
The mycelium. Home. Yeah, see? We got to respect the mushrooms.
Trying not to destroy those networks, and that, because it's all so complicated and so beautiful, but it's a whole nother world down there.
Right.
So I'm trying to tend to that world by feeding it, giving it, you know, water and attention, but also being as uninvolved as I can be while still
farming.
Is that
like giving it rest or like, I've heard of crop rotation where you like plant different things that either give back or take. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Or I'm out of my league a little bit here.
Oh, totally. I mean, this could probably be a whole nother show just on all of this. But I'm talking about cover cropping. That is one of the things that we do, which I think you just kind of alluded to, essentially growing a crop just to feed the soil.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the things we do. I'm also talking about minimizing tillage, so minimizing mm-hmm. mechanization. So that kind of goes back to why I say you're looking for these local farms that are on a smaller scale for them. I mean, there's some really, really wonderful large-scale production farms. I'm not trying to draw a line in the sand here, but in general, a farm that's able to focus on the life of the soil, and that means not coming in with these like kind of harsh tactics of using really intensive mechanization and really intensive chemicals.
Mm-hmm. So, meaning like a machine that would harvest the vegetables versus like hand picking?
Meaning more like disking and tilling and really going in and turning the soil over frequently time and time again is what we try to limit.
Okay.
Because the soil, you know, the mycelium in the soil are building structures, homes.
Right.
And so every time you go in with a big machine to disc up and till the soil, you're chopping those things up. It's like an earthquake for the underground, you know, soil biology.
Wow.
And so
I had never thought about that.
Yeah.
Thank you for enlightening me.
Yeah. So we're trying to minimize that, you know.
Okay.
So we're trying to build soil up. Mm-hmm. And that means, cover cropping. We're adding compost. We're trying to minimize intensive tillage
mm-hmm.
And cultivation. So it just means, honestly, more manual labor. It means that we're in the soil more physically with our hands. We're touching everything. You know, it requires a lot of people. Like last summer I had 9 employees. We're on 3 acres. So that's, you know, whereas on a conventional farm, you got one guy running 1,000 acres.
Right.
It's just a different way. There's just a totally different relationship with the soil.
Totally. And so that's, you know, with grocery shopping too, I'm sure that everyone, not me, has just noticed they have become so expensive, even at like City Market and stuff. And so there used to be, you know, I feel like this argument like, oh, I don't buy from the local farm because they're so much more expensive. But I wonder, like, from your perspective, has that gap closed, or just how the grocery, you know, prices have had to increase significantly? Have you had to, you know, adapt your business model to stay afloat too? You know, I'm just wondering about that gap, that perceived gap, you know?
I mean, the grocery store is like the most amazing mirage we've ever built for ourselves.
I love that you call it a mirage. I mean, is it full of dying food or fake food?
Well, no. I mean, the idea that you could walk into a space and get anything you want at any given time at any point in the year, like,
it's not real.
It's not going to last.
It's not sustainable. So, we're talking about regenerative.
Right. I mean, it's just not. It is like a false reality that we've created for ourselves, essentially, that at some point won't be able to sustain itself. And so maybe right now what we're seeing is some prices increasing. I mean, it's always blown my mind, how does my lettuce cost more than lettuce that was grown in California and shipped
here?
It doesn't make sense, like oil and gas, how does that happen? And then there's a lot of factors that go into that, and a lot of policies, and it comes down to a lot, honestly, yeah, a lot of policy, as
politics,
well as like labor and human rights violations,
and scalability
for sure. Right. That's huge, and mechanization, and I mean, don't get me wrong, like huge farms and larger corporations have gotten so efficient that they have, you know, eliminated a lot of the waste that you see in a smaller operation like mine, where, you know, we're just not as efficient. We don't have tools that are built for one specific job, and we're, you know, moving a lot of things around. But I think I am seeing those prices come closer together. I'm seeing, you know, my chefs at restaurants are like, oh, that's great. This is actually, you know,
good value.
Yeah. And, you know, my produce typically lasts longer, so they have less waste. And,
right. Because it's fresher. That's like, you know, there's like actual value. There's perceived value. And like what you talked about, you know, as soon as a vegetable or something is cut from the root, it starts dying and it starts losing nutritional value 24 hours, you know, as you said. And so if you're paying a little bit more, but it lasts longer and you're not throwing out as much and it's better nutrition, then to me that, you know, more than fills the gap.
Yeah, I believe that as well. And I think it's worth exploring those prices, because I think people would be surprised to learn they're not as dramatic as you might think. But in those spots where they are, when local food is more expensive, I think it's for good reason. And you can be rest assured that your money's going to a good place. I mean, I don't know any farmer who is just rolling in the dough and like spending money greedily. All the farmers I know are really, you know, wholesome people trying to do right by, you know, of our local farming community. I mean, trying to do right by the land and by their employees, and bringing you a good product that's, again, going to be healthier for you, going to taste better, going to last longer, and that you can rest assured you're not supporting any of these like giant
corporate entities. And that's where too, like as an entrepreneur in this valley, I've had my private practice for almost 7 years, and I know there's a lot of other entrepreneurs, and I'm always big on like, how can I keep my money in the valley? You know, like whenever I go to spend, and for years I've thought, you know, yes, everybody's like, go vote. And that is a big power. But how we buy our food, how we feed ourselves is also, you know, a huge responsibility and a huge power that we yield every day. And to me, it comes through, like, I don't expect the government or any of these big people to make the right choice for us. I always feel like any revolution is going to come through the consumer. So if we like have an informed consumer and they start buying all this, and we starve the, you know, the bigger one, you know, like, and we starve the bigger farms, you know, I feel like that's honestly the only way we transition. I don't see legislation and government, you know, making the right choice for us for food source or local farming and all that. I think it's going to have to be the consumers ourselves who create that, if that makes sense. What do you think?
No, I agree with a lot of that. And I feel like one of the most fun things about my CSA is really the community that builds around it. I think a lot of people end up staying in the CSA, not just for, yeah, local food and, you know, getting a lot of fresh produce each week, but also it becomes kind of a social event, and you come and you meet your farmer and you see your other neighbors and you're talking recipes and coming into the garden and watching it evolve through the season and learning about all these different crops maybe that you've never eaten before, or learning new techniques about cooking them, and sharing in dinner parties with your fellow CSA members and watching them cook food in different methods. It's pretty fun.
And it changes the relationship.
Yeah, exactly. It just ends up becoming a whole nother aspect of your life, that you have a different relationship with how you eat, how you interact with your food, and the land that grew it and the place that grew it.
There's something very grounding. And with as complicated as, you know, modern life has gotten, you know, I don't want to look at the past as like some fantasy, like, oh, things were so perfect when it was, you know, Little House on the Prairie days and we grew our own food and stuff. But as an occupational therapist and as someone who focuses on nervous system health, modern science, you know, is starting to prove how working in the dirt is good for our immune system, and being, you know, there's like, it makes sense,
yeah,
that having a relationship, a good, healthy relationship with Mother Earth and a relationship with our food, it makes too much sense. But now we also know scientifically that that's sort of what we're meant to do as humans. And this disconnection from our food and this disconnection from real food, especially in all the processed food, I think that there's larger ramifications, you know, emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, physically,
yeah,
you know, that I think a lot of people are waking up to.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing how quickly we lost connection with food. And I was actually talking with a farmer who I believe he's in his 70s, and he was like, I don't know, it's amazing how quickly conversations have completely changed, and I'm explaining things to people I had never imagined I'd used to have to explain.
Because was it in the 50s, like with the convenience stuff and all? Was it like 40s, 50s when it really shifted?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it had to do with, our farms, you know, getting a lot bigger. So there became a lot less farmers. So a lot less people knew farmers. So therefore, you know, knew a lot less about growing food.
Right.
Just with, it started with the Industrial Revolution. But yeah, and then in the 50s, once we actually changed the way we ate, you know, all of a sudden it became convenience food. And, changing our relationship to the kitchen and cooking and prepping,
right,
food, and therefore,
and like females entering the workforce and war, you know, it's such like a complex, like
so many
the
factors,
soup,
yeah,
the soup of like what led to the situation we are
but
in.
The disconnect now is really powerful, that people don't, you know, if you don't have someone that's like luring you into this world, a lot of people don't know, you know, that carrots grow underground or that apples come from trees, even, you know, they're just, we have lost such an important ability to relate to nature, relate to our food, and to see the connections there. So we're lucky to be in this community where we have a lot of organizations that are doing great educational work, teaching our kids, teaching us,
right,
about not just agriculture, but about our, you know, natural landscapes and environment, which is so critical if we're going to do the work that needs to be done.
Right. And if I can share a quick story that kind of highlights what we're talking about. I am from Kentucky originally, Louisville, Kentucky, and I was working in a daycare back when I was like 19 or something one summer. And I was with like a preschool class. It was all like 4 or 5 year olds. And so one day I'm like, let's talk about food, you know, because I was wanting to, you know, that's why I ended up here in this valley, because I was like, I don't belong where I was put, so I must go find where I belong. And so anyways, I'm working with these kids and I ask them, like, okay, we're going to talk about food today. Can anyone tell me, where does food come from? And this little boy raises his hand and I said, go ahead, Anthony. He's like, the store. I'm like, okay, cool. It's like McDonald's. The box, the bag, you know, and I'm like sitting there like, oh, man. And so I'm starting to talk like, well, actually this and this grow underground, like what you said. And then, you know, does anyone know what a hot dog is made of? We get into that, you know, and they're like, what? And then, you know, I said, well, that's made of a pig generally. Sometimes it's made of a cow. And this little boy has this just look on his face. And I said, what's wrong? And he said, they're feeding us animals?
Oh,
He's like, I didn't know. And so then all of a sudden I'm like, this altruistic lesson that I wanted to like give to these children. Now I'm like, okay, should I have not gone here? Was this too much? Like, am I, you know, barking up the wrong tree? And so that I'll never forget that like interaction with children. It like really made me pause because I was not expecting the level of disconnection and lack of awareness that I received, you know, being with them. So I just wanted to throw that out there that it probably is the case more than we would like to admit across the country.
And I mean, when I kind of joked about the grocery store being a mirage, I mean, they play into that very much. Like, there's strict rules in the grocery store of like an apple needs to be this diameter and look this certain way for you know, they over time develop these standards to increase their sales that, you know, things have to look a very specific way to be sold at the grocery store. And I'm, you know, that leads to a lot of food waste, which is something we haven't even talked about yet, of another reason that I believe local food is important in this puzzle, because a farm like mine is reducing that food waste in the sense that we're going to sell you an ugly, you know, head of broccoli, or we're going to like
Mother Nature is not always
and it's
perfect
not
symmetric.
Ugly. Yeah. It's just not symmetric. It's just different sizes of different things, a little bit of, you know, we have a little bit of insect damage on our crops because we're not using pesticides, but we hopefully educate our customers to learn that that's actually a good sign. And, you know, a good thing if you got to wash a little bit of dirt off your produce. And again, just kind of re-steering people's perceptions and away from this shiny, glossy perception of packaged food and back towards like understanding that healthy food is of the earth. Knowing that connection, I think it's really great that you taught those kids that they're eating.
Hopefully it didn't scar them for life. Maybe it planted a seed. I pray for all of them. If any of you ever hear this, I'm sorry.
No, I mean, hopefully it just steered them towards developing a relationship with animals, with food, and seeing that, you know, that's kind of this circle of life that we're participating in. And I think that's a really important thing to understand and to try to come to grips with and participate in the healthiest way that you can.
Right. And to your point, you know, that whole the relationship piece with the earth, with your farmer, with the handler of the food, whoever, you know, the workers. And so that's where it was a really beautiful practice. I forget even who introduced it to me. But I've shared it. I have a 5-year-old. And so I will share, like, let's pray for who grew this food. Let's pray for who handled it, any of the transportation that brought it to us. And so that's a way, you know, and I encourage all the listeners, you know, I'm not expecting everyone to stop grocery shopping immediately, but it's like small tests of change. Like, maybe go to the farmer's market more often this summer, or maybe go to Two Roots. Is it tworootsfarm.com or Two Roots?
Yeah.
Okay. Two Roots. Maybe you go to tworootsfarm.com and check out some of the winter produce and decide if maybe you add one or two meals this winter, you know, with some local produce.
Yeah.
Or if you're not going to change your spending habits right away, maybe at least start planting that message at dinner when you're setting some intentions or blessing the food or doing whatever ritual your family or group of people have. Maybe let's all start having that intentions of like, let's thank who grew this. Let's thank who transported this, who handled this food. And that alone, that intention and awareness might lead us, you know, into a better relationship with the earth and food, as we kind of have to, I feel like we have to re-engineer how we live in the next generation or so.
Yeah, I think drawing attention to where things are coming from and how they were grown is important. Yeah, just starting to ask those questions, if nothing else. And yeah, I mean, I'd love to say, everybody just walk out your door and you'll meet a farmer out there and you'll be able to find your local food. I think we're working that direction. In our valley, we have a lot of momentum and a lot of progress that way. But I think one thing our world needs most right now is more farmers, more people getting involved, growing food, raising livestock. And young people that are interested in becoming agriculturalists in any degree, I super encourage you to do so. I think it's not only can be a wonderful life and provide you with a lot of, you know, just personal reasons why I love being a farmer, but also one of the most important things I think we can be doing for the planet right now, trying to grow food in a regenerative way and making those options available, changing the way we have a relationship with the land, changing our relationship with food, and with our neighbors, too. So
Right. And that's
if you want to grow food, do it.
Do it, right. And that's where one time, previous episode, I had Alia Howe on. And she does a lot in the community with, like, storytelling events and artists. And that was one of the main points that she brought into my awareness, that without, like, a narrative, without, like, a community story or that community feel, life can get pretty mundane. And, and you can feel pretty separated and lost or alone. And so that's where, you know, being involved in a CSA or getting involved with the earth and your food, like you said, that sense of community and that narrative around how we feed ourselves and our community and interact with the earth.
It's powerful.
It's so powerful. And like what we alluded to earlier, that disconnect, you know, just that, like, if we had to pick one thing, like, what is going on with humanity? Like, what is going on with depression, anxiety? What is going on, you know, with all of these toxic behaviors or generational trauma? If we brought it back to basics, looking at how we interact with the earth and feed ourselves, I think is kind of a foundational truth that all of us are going to have to face at some point in this lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's worth sharing, too, that I'm a first generation. Well, I'm sure there was, I know I have people in my family that has farmed
in the past.
I am not. I did not grow up on a farm. I, you know, found agriculture later. And it's possible to get involved and to grow food and to, even if it's not, you know, starting a farm, if it's just diving in, find your local farmer, maybe get a community garden plot.
Right.
And engage.
And quit growing grass. Quit watering grass. Do like edible landscapes or something, people. We got to get away from watering all this not edible grass in America, right? Well, Harper, thank you so much for your time and your wisdom and your passion. And if you're interested in Harper's work, go to tworootsfarm.com. This is SS Kitty on KDNK Radio. This has been the Current Ritual Public Affairs Show. Harper, any last thoughts?
Thank you so much. And yeah, support your local farmers.
Whoop, whoop. All right. Take care of each other. Until next time. Bye-bye.